Time to welcome in Sally Lucas for a big half hour of Talking Travel. And Sally, whereabouts will you be taking us today?
Well, last week we decided to talk about things we could do of our own volition rather than flying or using up fuel, as we're all a bit worried about at the moment. So I thought we'd talk about the lovely popular Camino de Santiago walk, or the variation of walks. You can do the whole walk, but there's also, it breaks into a variety. So we'll go through some of the options of those as well. So it is not just one route. It's actually a network of ancient pilgrimage trails that lead to the Santiago de Compostela and the cathedral, which is the end of the walk. Though at the end of that walk, you can do what they call an additional walk called the Finisterre, which takes you to the actual coastline and these dramatic cliffs. So you can add that on to the end as well.
So you've done a massive walk, want to do another one?
Oh yeah, why not? Our friends did it, we went crazy. And they're going back this year to do another part of the walk. Anyway, that's okay. The most well-known route is the Camino Francés, which stretches from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port near the border of France and Spain to Santiago de Compostela, which of course is all the way across to the western side of Portugal. Now it is another popular route is the Portuguese Camino, because the Portuguese people decided they wanted a route as well, and that comes from Porto up to Santiago de Compostela. So you've got a lot of itineraries to choose from. You've got 8 different routes. So it's quite amazing. The whole route, if you did the whole thing, I think is about 1,550 kilometres.
Oh, okay.
So it's not...
More than one hit.
Yeah, it takes you about, I believe, about 3 months to do it.
Yeah, well, sounds about right.
Roughly, yeah. Is that right? I think that's right.
Well, it's like walking from here to Brisbane and then coming back to about Port Macquarie. So, on foot.
On foot. But you can do it, of course, with accommodation now. And so, you know, you can either do it as an organised walk that you could do through a tour company, or you can, if you're game enough, to do it on your own. And then you can just book ahead like some Airbnbs or some places to stay at along the way and do it that way. A lot of it's shared accommodation sometimes, so it depends, you know, how good you are with that, and if you're wanting your own room, things like that, you really need to book ahead, because a lot of these little towns along the way are quite small, as you can imagine, so they don't have stacks of accommodation, and there's a lot of people do this walk. Also, it's known as the Way of St. James, by the way, as well as the Camino de Santiago. And as we said, it culminates at the Cathedral of Santiago de Compostela in Spain. I said Portugal before, and I meant Spain, sorry, everybody. And they go from Porto up there as well. It's across the top of Spain. It's the longest pilgrimage route in the world and only one of 2 UNESCO World Heritage Trails. The other one is actually in Japan. And there's quite an extensive trail you can do through Japan as well. So the first one of them was the 19th century Camino de Santiago that dates back to the discovery of St. James' tomb in the 9th century. And this is called the Camino Primitivo, which is also known as the original way. And it was said to be the first route walked, with origins in 9th century, going back to the Asturian people. And King Alfonso II first recognised the tomb of Santiago and travelled to that site. So it really has got a lot of history and a pilgrimage attached to the whole walk.
I guess when you mention all that history, because again, you're walking, which would have been, you're kind of literally walking in their footsteps. It's not like you're driving a car or something. You just literally, is exactly what they saw.
It is exactly what they saw, and that's true. The other one is another one called the Camino del Norte, or the Northern Way, and it's another one of the oldest pilgrimage routes to go through to Santiago de Compostela. As we mentioned earlier, is the Camino Finisterre, which is a little one you can do at the end and tack on to the end of one of the walks that you do. The Camino Francés we mentioned, and that's the one that's the most popular. And in the 10th century, there was a bishop, Godescalc, and he made a pilgrimage from his village of Le Puy-en-Velay to the city of Santiago, and that's the way the French way was born. And that's where everyone starts. That's the popular spot that everyone starts from generally. And by the 11th and 12th centuries, the Camino Francés emerged as the most popular and best developed route. So there are more routes, as we said, the Portuguese one as well. And then also today you can do, as I mentioned, various sections of it. To give you an idea, as I said, the whole length of it is roughly 1,550. The final stage of the little bit you do at the end is you can walk that over 8 days. It's 100 kilometres return from Santiago to the Finisterre. The Portuguese one is done usually over 14 to 15 days. It's 270 kilometres and it's considered moderate to challenging. The Camino Francis, which is that full route, is about 812 kilometres over roughly 5.5 to 6 weeks. You do that and it's considered challenging in parts. And then you've got another one that just does the highlights of the Camino Francis, where it can be done as a group guided itinerary as well, so you're not doing the whole thing. And then you've got the Primitivo, which is a 320 kilometres from Oviedo to Santiago de Compostela over 19 days. If you don't want to do the whole Francis, you can just do the last part of the Camino Santiago. And also there are obviously other areas. Now, from which we said this, Le Puy, there is another walk called the Chemin de Stevenson. And this was named after Robert Louis Stevenson,
okay,
who actually walked 270 kilometres south to a little town called Alès with his donkey called Modestine.
Of course he did.
Of course he did. And I guess back in the day, people did just travel by foot, of course, or horse, you know, but that was the only way you could travel.
Yeah, that's it. That was that or stay where you are. So, yeah. I mean, but again, it's what everyone did see. The concept was not lost on them, I guess.
No, and I mean, it is a very popular route. You know, all sections are. But it's very interesting. Our friends that did it last year just said it was just fascinating. Like, there was all ages, all types, all nationalities, you know, and you'd just meet up with a group at the end of the day and have a beer and have some nice Spanish food or whatever and get ready. But you can get all weather. They actually got a reasonable amount of rain. So you've got to expect all conditions and just have really good trekking gear. You'd really need good waterproof, you know what I mean, weatherproof trekking gear, because you can get a range of seasons throughout the whole walk.
Yeah, and particularly, I mean, this is not like, well, I'm walking today and tomorrow. We're talking weeks, sometimes months. So
good shoes,
a bit of rain.
Good shoes, a couple of walking poles.
And a spare.
And yes.
A spare pair.
And, you know, our friends just travel with hand luggage. They're amazing.
Good on them.
Yeah, they just travel hand luggage. They've just got all the stuff they must get from whatever the, you know, camping or backpack or whatever they wherever they go to get it. And they just have, like, probably two pairs of interchangeable pants, you know, the weatherproof jacket, a couple of thin layers of, like, your thermals and, you know, obviously a hat. And, yep, and they just travel very light and, yeah, amazing.
To be a clothing or footwear store along that track, huh?
Oh, I reckon the people that forget to take their walking poles, I reckon they'd sell a lot of those.
Probably just a couple. Sally, as always, the cost of things is something that we just have to grin and bear a little bit. And you want to talk about what's happening with the airfares at the moment?
Well, I guess it's good and bad.
Okay. We'll start with the good first, maybe?
Well, yeah, we could. Or do we leave that till the end?
All right, let's start with the bad. Like a Band-Aid, rip it off.
Rip it off. But we did sort of mention this last week, that because of what's happened, obviously, with the crisis in the Middle East, that, for example, Qatar Air still isn't flying because they're too close to what's going on. Okay, so they're suffering badly, as you can imagine, with lack of business. Etihad through Abu Dhabi, and also you've got Emirates through Dubai. So those three main airlines, and you've got Oman Air into Oman and, of course, into Muscat, but it doesn't seem to be suffering as much as the other areas, which have been more predominantly, if you like, targeted by Iran with missiles and so on. So people had to look at alternate routes, or most people wanted to, obviously, go with Qatar. You obviously can't go with Qatar, so you had to look at alternate routes. Emirates is still flying, and Etihad, but obviously their business, again, had dropped off. The Asian carriers have made a nice little fistful, though, because everyone had to travel via Asia specifically, not always, but you could go via Alaska or
Singapore, et cetera.
Singapore, Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, Japan, whatever, and taking that route. So, unfortunately, those prices tended to escalate because of demand.
No, I won't believe it, Sally. Won't believe it.
But the Middle Eastern airlines, for example, last week Etihad was offering return economy flights between Sydney and London via Abu Dhabi for as little as under $1,600. Now, Qatar, as I said, there's still very limited operations due to the war, and they hope to be selling flights later in April between either Sydney or Melbourne and London or Paris for about 1,700 return. So you are going to get some bargains from the Middle East Airlines once they start flying in capacity, because they're desperate, as you can imagine, you know.
Yeah, they'll just want a bum on every seat.
Yeah, and of course, not just on the aircraft, at the stopover points. So the tourism in Dubai or Abu Dhabi or Doha is suffering as well, not just the airline. So you will find, I think, that you will get some good deals. How long they'll go for, it's hard to say. And once initially it builds back up, which we hope is what's going to happen, obviously. We don't want this to continue on for too much longer. So just keep an eye on that. Just keep checking with your travel agent. They keep getting updates on a daily basis from these airlines, letting them know what's happening, when their capacity will open up again, or when they're adding in more flights, or when they're even starting up again. You know what I mean? And also, the main other thing to be aware is to stay in touch with DFAT, so you're aware of warnings. And if you're not covered, if, for example, there for a while, and I haven't looked today, sorry, but the government was not going to repatriate you to Australia if you even transited via Dubai, let alone get off the plane.
Okay.
If something went wrong.
Right.
So you've got to just be
aware. There's a lot of factors you have to look at.
There are a lot of factors, but look, talk to your travel agent. They're the experts in this area, that they're on top of it all, and they'll always be able to talk you through it and, you know what I mean, make the right choices on your behalf. So just keep that in mind. So anyway, enough about all of that.
You've got some happy things there.
So I thought, why not talk about something happy? So Finland has done it again. The Northern Hemisphere, a nation, has been named the world's happiest country for the 9th year in a row.
How are they doing it?
I know. How are they doing it? Well, and most of the Scandinavians, they're all up there. All the others in the top, those top five, are like Iceland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, etc. And then after that, you come down to Costa Rica. You've got the Netherlands, Luxembourg and Switzerland make it in the top 10. New Zealand came in at 11 and we dropped to 15. But anyway, I guess that's not too bad. That's out of a ranking of 147 countries.
Yeah, I suppose if you went through every school test you ever did, you came 15th out of 147. That's not a fail, is it?
No, it's not a fail. It's not a fail by any means. And also something lovely, the first whale sharks of the 2026 season have just been spotted in West Australia's Ningaloo region. So there's lots of lovely cruises you can do up there, or if you're on a self-drive holiday, you can book in to Exmouth. Just remember, Exmouth's quite a small town, and of course they've just suffered this dreadful cyclone at the moment, which is bad for them because this is the start of their, you know, tourist season. So getting accommodation and stuff, because of the damage, could be very difficult at the moment. So, you know, you might be better off on some sort of an organised itinerary, but you always just check, or you check with the local tourist bureau or the West Australian Tourism, just to find out what's happening there. Or your travel agent, again, will always look into it on your behalf. So, but it's between March and July, so hopefully if you could leave it off. And then they also get humpback whales between June and October. But we see them, of course, so for us, the draw card is the whale shark. Not that I've done it, but my husband and son and daughter-in-law have, and they said they are amazing. And you see photos of them, and they look like they're just gliding through the water. And Scott said, you can't cape up with them. It looks slow because they're so big. But he said, you try snorkeling and
good luck.
you can't. He said, it's an amazing experience. If it's something that's on your bucket list to do, make sure that you do it, because it's just very special.
All right, next few months might be a chance to have a look at that. As we wrap up talking travel with Sally Lucas, and as always, Sally, you're looking into the hot deals, and you've thrown somebody up the front this week.
I did it just for you, Mark, because I wasn't aware it was you today, so I've brought it to the fore.
There we go.
Hurtigruten.
I have no association with that company. I've never even looked at their website. The name reminds me of like a Norwegian ice cream shop name. I think that's why I like it.
Yes, I'm sure it's Haagen-Dazs. Anyway, whatever. So this is just a one-off itinerary they're doing for our lovely people out there who are wine connoisseurs, or even if you're not a connoisseur. It's limited to a smaller group of people. It's got a single departure on the 1st of August this year. So you've got a premium Arctic voyage, of course, across the Arctic Circle, during the Lofoten Islands, Tromsø and the North Cape. You get exclusive onboard tastings and also activities, etc. You've got a welcome dinner in Oslo. You do what they call Norway in a nutshell. It's this beautiful journey you do from Oslo by Flam Railway and bus as well, that takes you all across to Bergen. So you're seeing scenic fjords, beautiful mountain vistas. It's a stunning rail journey, I can tell you that. And you've got stays in Oslo, Flam and Bergen before you're joining the cruise. So you're getting all sorts of aquavit and beer and wine tastings, coastal kitchen experiences, lunches and dinners, as I said, the scenic rail journey, the seven-night cruise which goes from Bergen to Longyearbyen, which is just fantastic. You do a wildlife and glacier cruise on a state-of-the-art hybrid catamaran, a private tour of the northernmost brewery in the world. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, a four-course special dining experience at a hotel. So if you're interested, as I said, limited departures left on this, and it's the 1st of August, and I know we've got a lot of wine lovers and viticulturists out in our area of the world with the Hunter Valley on our doorstep, so I'm sure there'd be someone out there that would love to take advantage of that.
And get their photo taken in front of the sign that says the northernmost brewery in the world, but it'll be in Norwegian, so they won't be able to understand it.
And also they have with their HX expeditions at other part of the Hurtigruten, they've got lots of 35% off or a free upgrade to a suite on a whole range of their other cruises, because it's their 130th anniversary this year of operation, which is something quite fantastic, isn't it?
Very much so.
Yeah. Now, if you're looking somewhere else that's in a cold direction, Canada and Alaska in 2027, there's a Rockies Explorer and an Alaskan cruise. It's a land tour and an ocean cruise. So this is really incredible that you can do this combination with APT, and you're doing all those beautiful rocky areas that we always hear about, like Lake Louise and Banff, and just gorgeous. And then you're doing your cruise up through the, obviously, Alaskan Passage. There's different durations, different prices, depending on how long you want to go for. Yes, 17 days, 16 days, right up to a 25-day. And there's savings on all of those at the moment as well, subject to availability, savings of up to $2,600. Australia, back in our land of the wood, 2027's now on sale. We were mentioning, of course, the Ningaloo Reef, but this is just a rail journey on the Indian Pacific, which takes you across, obviously, from Sydney through Broken Hill and Adelaide, etc., through Cook, which is that little town in the middle of South Australia, the sort of the middle of the Nullarbor almost, Rawlina, and then you end up in Perth. You have a couple of days in Rottnest Island, a couple of days in Margaret River, and a night in Perth included in that. Savings of up to $2,800 per couple, again, subject to availability. And Bunnink Tours have got a whole range of wonderful programs. Look, they operate everywhere in the world, so it doesn't matter. South Africa, Mexico, highlights of Peru and Ecuador, Peru in style, Sri Lanka, Colours of Rajasthan, South India Explorer, Japan, Vietnam and Cambodia. All of their packages, which I love, and it's an Australian company, all small, usually no more than 18 passengers, and all include airfares and gratuities and most meals, as well as your sightseeing. So they're, again, on all their discounted packages. It's subject to availability until sold out. So there's lots out there at the moment, of course, as usual, as you can see. And there's another one with Vietnam and Cambodia and Discover Vietnam as well. Got departures in January to November, up till November this year. And, yeah, they're both up to November. Discover Vietnam and Cambodia. It's a 23-day. It's quite an intensive, lovely journey through Vietnam and Cambodia. You get to go on Ha Long Bay to Hoi An, Phnom Penh. Lovely itinerary, and there's one if you just want to do Vietnam that just does that as well. And what's good about that one, it's giving you all a couple of, like, not just no one night stops, like 2 and 3 night stops everywhere, so you get to really enjoy the experience. And they've got departures up till November on those with savings as well. So look, there's a lot out there still, even though I know we're suffering a fuel crisis at the moment. It's nice to plan, it's nice to think ahead. And, you know, this gives you time, I guess, now to do that. And if you're not even thinking this year and you're thinking next year, a lot of them have got their early bird discounts already for 2027. So you can get savings already now for next year.
All right. Sounds pretty good, Sally. We'll catch you next time.
You will.
That's Talking Travel on 2NUR FM 103.7.